No, I mean, really, it's 468 at the bottom, because last time we just finished. 468 at the bottom. Because we learned, basically... No, we're not at the bottom, in fact, we're...
I'm sorry, 4 what?
468. We're going to start sentence 21.
What's it down?
It's Chof Aleph. Do I mark it down?
Yeah.
No, I just remember where we're up to. Okay, Pasuk Chof Aleph. So he says the Choshen, the breastplate, had 4 rows, 3 stones per row, corresponding with the 12 tribes. And the name of each tribe was based on that particular stone. But we said there were 6 letters on each stone. So most of the tribes had 5 letters. So therefore they had also Avraham, Yitzchok, Yaakov, Shiftei, Yeshurun. So like Reuven, which is 5 letters, would have Resh, Aleph, Vav, Beis, Nun, and the Aleph of Avraham. Shimon would have the Beis of Avraham. Levi, which is 3 letters, had the Resh, Hei, Mem of Avraham. That's the way... What? You weren't there last week? You weren't there last week?
No.
Your husband wasn't here. You were here.
I was not here.
You were here.
I think I went to Rabbi Engels.
Maybe not. Oh, maybe not. Okay, right.
I think. I don't know.
Okay, whatever. There are 3 stones per line, right? 4 lines. Like it says in the Pasuk, about Tori Avin. There's one line at Odin Pidda Barakas, the Torah Sheni at Nefes HaPivyalim, and so on. So there are 3 stones, right? 3 diamonds, so to speak, per row. There are 4 rows. Now, starting from the top right, okay, they had the name of the Shvatim, like it says. Okay? Now, so, according to the Medrash, there were 6 letters on each stone. So the first stone was Reuven. But Reuven had only 5 letters, right? So after the word Reuven was the Aleph of Avraham's name. Shimon was also 5 letters. So they had the Beis of Avraham's name. Levi has 3 letters. So they added the Resh Hei Mem of Avraham. So the first row had Avraham's name. The second row was part of Yitzchak and Yaakov. Shiftei Yeshurun. That's the way... Okay, so that's what we're up to now.
Yeah,
and the Shvatim. Shiftei Yeshurun. Okay, now this is what he says. Va'avonim ti'al shmeiz b'nei Yisrael. The stone should have the name of the sons of Israel, meaning the 12 Shvatim. Shnei masar al shmeisam. Pituch echeisam. They were engraved like a signet ring. I mean like a ring, you know, the letters engraved in it. Ish al shmei, each man on his name. It should be for the 12 tribes. So this is what we discussed. This is what we're up to last week, that their names were on each stone. Now the question is, how did they connect this Choshen to the Ephod? Now, we're soon going to learn there was a Kesenes which was on the skin. Over that went a Me'il, a robe that we're soon going to learn about. Over the me'il went the ephod, the apron. Over the apron went the choshen, the breastplate. Now, how was the breastplate connected to the ephod, to the apron? So the pasuk says the way is it connected as follows. No. The Kohen Gadol did not wear tzitzis. In those days, it was only an obligation, like even today, if you had a 4-corner garment, but tzitzis was not one of the garments that the Kohen Gadol wore. Okay, so now it says like this. Vasiza lacheshin, and the breastplate, and the cheshin should make sharshiris gavlus, chains at the end, masi aves, the work of a craftsman, zohav tar, pure gold. So at the bottom of the cheshin, there were chains. Okay? Now, vasiza lacheshin, you should make on the cheshin, shtei tabe zohav, 2 rings of gold, v'nasata shtei atabois, and you should put the 2 rings al shnei kseis acheshin at the end of the breastplate. Meaning, Well, here you could see it also. You see at the bottom of the Cheshen on page 469? Okay, there are two chains with two rings. Okay? And that was to connect the Cheshen to the bottom, as we'll soon see. When the Sata Shtei Avesis is of, you should take the two golden ropes, our Shtei Atabois and the two rings, Oksesa Cheshen, in other words, you put the chains through the rings. You put the chain through the rings, and then you connected it like that to the apron. Okay? The Eish takes Shtei Avesis, and the two ends of the two ropes, you should place on the two settings. The Nasata Kisses Eifed, put it on the shoulder straps of the Eifed, and Mulpanov towards the front. In other words, this is the story. This is the Cheshen, okay, before it was folded in half. Okay?
Yeah.
Cheshen we learned was folded in half. Yeah. The bottom half was folded backwards. Underneath the...
470.
Huh?
470
folded. Okay, so you got it here anyway. So you have the taboys, the rings, which were on top of the Cheshen. Here's a much clearer picture. That's it. And then you had the chains, the golden chains. Now, okay? Those golden chains went up to the stones that were on the ephod. Remember the ephod was this apron, and it had shoulder straps. I'm just trying to get the clearest picture for everything together. Here. You see on top, on the shoulder of the Kohen Gadol?
Right.
There's two, the shoulder straps came up from the back. Okay, and there are two stones. Okay, now, the Cheshen had, this Cheshen had two golden chains coming up from it. Okay, and it was connected to the two stones on the shoulders, which were where the Ephod was. Okay, how did the Cheshen was connected on its top and on its bottom. Okay, and it was connected to the Ephod on top and on the bottom. Now, on top, there were two rings on top of the Cheshen. Okay, one on each end. Then there were two golden chains. He looped the golden chains through the rings and connected them on top, on the shoulders of the Kohen Gadol, where the stones of the Ephod were. Okay, so that's how it was connected on top. That's all he's saying.
Yeah, they have help in the
dress. Uh-huh.
He couldn't do that by himself.
Why not? First of all, there was a guy that was called Pinchas HaMalbish. There was a guy that used to dress the Kohanim. He was in charge of not he himself, but he was in charge of the, he was their, what do you call them?
Butlers.
Butlers that dressed the people.
It seemed like it'd be pretty difficult to put all the things in one hand.
So we got 5 minutes early.
We could use two hands.
Use two hands for
the 1 minute. Shoulder. To put on the long undershirt on his skin, he could do himself, right? To put on the long me'il that we'll learn about soon, it's very easy. Put on the ephod, he just took it from the back and connected it on top. Then he took the cheshen, put the cheshen on, connected the two golden chains of the cheshen in the front to the top of this. Well, he could do it himself.
Huh?
Suspenders. Okay, then it says like this. Pasik Chav Vav. Okay, Vasishta. Now you have to do something else. You have to make another two rings of gold. Put them Al Shnei Kseis HaChoshen at the bottom. Al Eved Eifed Baisa on the inner side towards the Eifed. Meaning, just like, okay, look at the Cheshen. You have it in the picture 469, right? 469 Yechmashim, or if you want to look at 470. That was the picture of the Cheshen. The Cheshen on top had two rings with chains that were connected to the shoulder of the Ephraim. Then there were two rings at the bottom of the Cheshen that the Torah is talking about now. Huh? What is it? To the Ephraim at the bottom. You see at the bottom, and you see al at the end, Al Eifed, Eifed Beisit towards the Eifed. Now let's see the Pasik. Vasisa, Shteita Beisav, you should make two rings. Vinasata Eisav, Shtei Kisses, Eifed Mumata, Mumata Mimupanav. Take and put them at the bottom of the two shoulder straps at the Eifed towards its front, opposite the seam. Mimala Cheshav Eifed, above the belt of the Eifed. Now, what it means over here is as follows. Let's see if there's a clear. The Cheshav was connected on top. And like you see in 469, it was connected at the bottom. You see the way the Cheshav is connected with the two gold straps, two gold chains on top. And at the bottom is also connected with a shorter chain going into the top of the Eifed. That's all the Torah is saying over here. Okay. V'yiksus ha-cheshin. Then he said like this. You attach the cheshin mitaba esav from its rings. Al tabas ha-eifed to the rings of the Eifed b'fsil t'cheles with the thread of the t'cheles, which was made out of t'cheles. Lias ha-cheshin ha-eifed to be on top of the belt of the Eifed. That the cheshin shouldn't move from the eifed. So like this. At the bottom of the cheshin, in the middle, well, this picture is in the middle because the cheshin is not folded, right? You have that blue ribbon. Okay. The gold straps connected the eifed and the cheshin on top to the shoulder, right? The blue strings at the bottom, when there were rings at the bottom of the cheshin, there were rings on top of the eifed, and these blue strings, blue straps, connected the cheshin on the bottom to the eifed. So the cheshin basically was connected on top to the eifed, at the shoulders, and at the bottom was connected to the eifed itself, to the belt of the eifed. Because the Torah says, there's a mitzvah in fact, v'yizach ha-cheshin mi'al ha-eifed, the cheshin was not allowed to be loosened from the Eifed. And this was a negative commandment, by the way. They had to make sure that the Cheshin was always connected to the Eifed, to the apron, in a way that it didn't move off it. That, what are you looking at me like that for?
Nothing. Just when we take it off, then that means while he was wearing.
While he's wearing it, it had to be connected.
But it could be disconnected once.
When the Kohen went home, he didn't sleep in the big day kohuna.
Right.
When he went home, the Kohen Gadol didn't go home too often, the Rambam writes. He went home a little bit each day. Most of the day he was in the base of Mikdash. He was in charge of the whole system. So basically, the Cheshin, while he was wearing it and doing Aveda, the Cheshin was not allowed to move from the Eifed. Okay. So Vinasa Aaron Ashmeiz ben Yisrael, and Aaron had to carry, so to speak, or bear the names of the Bnei Yisrael, Becheshin Amishpat Alibe, in the Cheshin on his heart. So basically, if you look where the Cheshin was in the Kohen Gadol, the Cheshin, which is this where the stones are, right? That was, so to speak, on top of Aaron's heart.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is what the Pasuk is saying. He has to bear the names of the Bnei Yisrael on his heart. The Mefarshim explain what is the purpose of that. Like, what is that supposed to mean? He should always have in mind the Yidden. That he's constantly thinking about the Jewish people. Which, by the way, they explain an interesting lesson of this. That the lesson of it is that a person always should keep in mind another Jew. Some of the simple meaning is that Hashem should remember the righteousness. No, the righteousness of the Jewish people by him carrying the names. But the lesson the Mefarshim explained also means that the Kohen God themselves, should not forget about the Jewish people. The definition of a leader is one who constantly remembers the people rather than doing it for himself. That's the definition of a leader. They were they were able to do it from Kohen Gadol to Kohen Gadol, yes. Yeah. Unless if it got ruined, then they had to make a new one. I don't remember seeing anywhere, like even the Rambam, to my knowledge, I don't remember discussing how often they had to redo it. You know, certain kelim in the Beis Hamikdash, that the menorah was, they had many different menorahs in the Beis Hamikdash, and, you know, but it says as long as it lasted, it lasted.
They had the Choshen in the second
Beit Hamikdash. They had the only thing they were missing, but we're going to learn in the next pasuk, is the Urim V'Tumim. And we'll soon see what that was. The din was a Kohen Gadol that didn't have all eight garments was Chayiv Misa, if he worked. And not having all eight garments on his body. Now, the Rambam says that even though in the second Beit Hamikdash the Urim V'Tumim didn't work, because the Gemara says five things were missing in the second Beis Hamikdash. One of them was the Urim V'Tumim. That we'll soon see what that was. But the Rambam writes that you can't say they didn't have it because then the Kohen Gadol would be lacking one of the garments. So it says they had it, but it didn't work. So when the Gemara says they were missing it in the second Beis Hamikdash, it doesn't mean the physical Urim V'Tumim, means that it just didn't work. And we'll see now in the... Huh? Well, we'll soon see what it means working. Here, this is where we're up to now. A pasuk lamed. This is a very important pasuk. V'nasata cheshen me'mishpat, you should put into the cheshen as the urim v'tumim. The urim v'tumim, and I'll explain in a second what that means. V'hoyo levarim, they should be on Aaron's heart. B'vayel lefnei Hashem, when he comes before Hashem. V'nasa Aaron is mishpat b'nei Yisrael alibay, and Aaron shall carry or bear the judgment of the Yidden. Aliba and his heart, lefnei Hashem tamid, constantly before Hashem. Now, simply, what was the Urim V'Tumim? The Urim V'Tumim is explained like this. The Cheshen was this long thing bent over. Right? The top half had the stones, the bottom half was just material. So they folded it backwards. So there was a space between the two halves in the fold. In that fold, they put the Urim V'Tumim. Now, what was the Urim V'Tumim? It was parchment that had the name of Hashem of Ayin Beis, like we discussed last week, the various different ways of Yikivavke. But they had the name of Hashem, Shema Mefedish, and they had it on a piece of parchment, and it was put in between the Cheshen. Right. No. It was the same Ayin Beis. In fact, the Baal HaTurim says that here, Begmatria, he says that Urim V'Tumim is Begmatria Shem Shal Ben Shivim Mushtayim.
Names of God.
Now, the way it worked was like this. By the way, why was it called Urim V'Tumim? Urim because it shed light, or, and Tumim because it was complete. Okay, that's the, now. It says, Me'idim Dvarim, and it was Mashlim the Dvarim, that whatever the Urim V'Tumim said, that's the way it went. So they say like this. What happened was, Dramam says like this. The Kayin, if they wanted to ask a question from the Urim V'Tumim, so number one, it was only, you couldn't ask a question, should you open a business or not? That the Urim V'Tumim didn't, it was either if a king had a question, or a bezdin, or something for communal purposes. The classic example that they say was, in the beginning of Parshas of Shaftim, after Yeshua died, they wanted to know who should be the leader. Who should lead the Jews? So they asked the Kohen to ask Hashem, who should be the leader? You know, like which tribe should be the leader? So the Urim V'Tumim shined the letters through the Cheshen of Yehuda Ya'aleh. Because the Cheshen, we said, when you have all the Shvatim, and Avram, Yitzchok, and Yaakov, Shifta, Yeshurun, he had all the letters of the Aleph Beis. Okay? So if they asked the question, like the king had a question about the nation, what to do, so the Kohen would face the Aron Kodesh. He wasn't in the Holy of Holies. He's not allowed to go into the Holy of Holies. But he faced towards the Aron, and he would ask a question in a regular speaking voice, and all of a sudden the letters would light up. And that's how it, the Kohen Gadol. You know, you told the Kohen Gadol what the question is. The Kohen Gadol faced the Holy of Holies. He asked the question in natural speaking voice, and the candle lit up. And he says, he would stand, he said like this, the guy that asked the question, like the king or whatever, would stand behind the Kohen Gadol. The Shoyel would ask his question belachash, quietly, like you davening Shemone Esrei. And then the Shoyel Ruach Kodesh came on the Kohen Gadol. He looked at the letters that lit up, and he would see which ones.
You didn't
see. Like, if Hashem wanted to say Alei, so the Ayin of Shimon lit up, the Lamed of Levi, and the Hay of Yehuda.
Oh my God.
And then he would know which way it was.
Wow.
Then, the Kohen Gadol, by the way, it says, if the Kohen Gadol wasn't a worthy Kohen Gadol, like in the second base of Midrash, they changed them every year. So the things didn't light up. And he brings down, by the way, in the English Chumash, he says a very interesting thing. If you look on 471, he speaks about this a little bit.
What?
At 471, you know the whole story with Chana, Shmuel's mother. She came to the Beis HaMikdash and she was davening for a kid, and Eli thought she was drunk.
Right.
Okay. So the Vilna Gaon says what really happened was, it's interesting, look inside. The Vilna Gaon gives a classic interpretation of how the message of the Urim V'Tumim could be misunderstood. He says, when Chana, the future mother of Prophet Shmuel, entered the Beis HaMikdash to pray for her child, the Kohen Gadol Eli saw her unusual demeanor and reckoned her to be a drunkard rather than a supremely righteous woman. The Gaon contends that Eli consulted the Urim V'Tumim regarding Chana, and the letters Shin, Chof, Resh, Hei lit up. So Eli thought it was Shikera, but it was really Kesheda. So Eli misread the Urim V'Tumim, the same letters, one is a drunkard, and one is she's a kosher woman. So what really lit up was that she was a kosher woman. But Eli thought the letters lit up, the word Shikera.
But the letter doesn't...
They did not light up in order necessarily.
So he has to put them together.
Right.
It was human error, not computer error.
It was human error, not computer error.
Does that mean Eli was unrighteous?
No, it means at that time Hashem wanted that Eli should scream at her and she should answer. Hashem wanted that thing to happen. But then Ramban adds another interesting thing. All the kelim of the Kohen Gadol, all the garments, it says you should make. The Urim V'Tumim doesn't say you should make. It just says put it there. So the Ramban writes that Moshe himself was the one that wrote it. Nobody else wrote it. All the other garments, craftsmen made, weavers made, engineers made. The Urim V'Tumim, the Ramban writes that Moshe Rabbeinu himself, because only he knew how to do it. And then he brings down what the Rambam says, that in the time of Yoshua HaMelech, in the first Beis HaMikdash, he saw in prophecy that the Jews are going to be sinning, so he hid the Urim V'Tumim. And that's why they didn't have it.
Rabbi, the Kohen Gadol would wear the Choshen like this, right?
Right.
But how could he see it lighting up while it was here?
He looked down and was able to see which letters lit up. Yeah? Yeah. They didn't ask three times a day from the Urim V'Tumim. It was a rare thing that they asked questions from the Urim V'Tumim. But he looked down. Huh? Maybe at a mirror.
Yeah.
No, he was able to bend down, it says, and read.
That's it was a mirror, that's why he made a mistake between the Shekira and the...
No.
So we still don't have them, the Urim
V'Tumim? No, we don't have them. Huh? The third Beit HaMikdash will have him, yes. And therefore, by the way, the Mefarshim explain that because you could read the letters very different ways, like Shikera and Ksheira, so the Kohen Gadol Taka needed Nevuah to be able to know which is the correct way of saying it. And that if he wasn't so great. Okay, so therefore the Urim V'Tumim Taka Moshe Rabbeinu himself did it, and nobody else was able to do that. Huh? No. Again, the Rambam writes they had the parchment with the name of God on it, that it should be complete garments, but it didn't work. In other words, it didn't light up, and they didn't get answers. And not all Kohanim Gadolim were able to get answers.
Even
in the first Beis HaMikdash. Yeah, it says if the Kohen Gadol is not a Yirei Shemayim, you know, and the ultimate level, it wasn't. Okay. Then the pasuk continues like this. Okay, next is the Me'il. The next guy in pasuk Lamed Aleph. Basisas Me'il or Eifed, you should make the robe of the Eifed, Klil Techeles, completely out of blue wool, turquoise wool. In fact, the Medrash says it was the color of Techeles. Okay? I'm saying, it says in the pasuk, Klil Techeles, it was completely made out of Techeles. The blue wool that they have on the tzitzis.
Yeah.
It's actually turquoise, they say, but now it was taka threads, not like the chesh was multicolored, you know, all the different colors. The me'il had one color. The me'il was a very simple garment, in fact. This was the me'il. One material, one garment, one color. Only the bottom had very interesting things to it. But the actual me'il was just a robe that went over the long undershirt that he wore. Huh? There were no tzitzis. They were four-quarter, didn't have tzitzis on it. Okay, we'll see about the me'il. Vayav pirei shebeseichei. The head opening should be folded over within it, meaning making a double seam, because we'll learn that it wasn't allowed to tear. So they have to make it in a way that, you know, the opening of the me'il doesn't tear. And Safa Yelafiv Saviv, that should have a border all around with weaver's work. Kfi Sachra, it shall be like the opening of a coat of mail. Lo Yikari, that it shouldn't tear. Because it was forbidden for the me'il to become torn, even accidentally. So they made it in such a way, it was like a double stitch, double weaving in a way that it shouldn't tear. Now, Vasis al Shulov, you should make at the bottom of the me'il, okay, now, before we even go to the bottom of the meal, the Mefarshim explained this. Why was the meal only Techeles? All the other things were multicolored. Why was this only the color of Techeles? So he brings down, this was again for a Jew not to sin. Because when they looked at it, Techeles, Rashi says by Tzitzis, what's the concept of Techeles? It's similar to the Kisei HaKovet, to the throne of Hashem, which is the Shechina. So therefore, when the Jews would look at the me'il, which hung down below the Eifed, they won't sin. It will remind them of the Shechina. Just like Hashem says, you know, by Tzitzis, you're supposed to have a thread of Tcheles, that she remind us that Yerisim is Chatim is called Mitzvah Hashem. Okay, that had to be doubled. Now, Vasisa al Shulov, Pasuk Lamed Gimel, Yishmek at the bottom of the Me'il, remain a pomegranate, but they weren't pomegranates, as in the fruit. They were material that looked like pomegranates. Okay? Remain a tcheles v'agamen v'tilashani, turquoise, purple, and scarlet wool, al shul of saviv, and the hem at the bottom. Now, they don't have a... Well, yeah, and 472, where it says Rimeinu Pameini, at the bottom of the Me'il, which that picture is, they had pomegranate bell, pomegranate bell, pomegranate bell.
The bell rings when you walk?
Yeah, yeah. It was actually
But the bell is not the sign of the Christian, whatever.
First, I'll tell you, we were first. Just remember that. Whatever they got from us. Now, hanging all around were pomegranate-shaped tassels. Actually, tassels that were shaped like round, the Rashi says like an egg, you know, like the shape of a pomegranate. And in between the pomegranates, there were bells, actually golden bells with a ringer. There were 72 bells and 72 pomegranates.
Mm-hmm. I mean, real pomegranate?
No.
No, no, no. They're real gold bells. The pomegranates were material that looked just shaped like a pomegranate. You see it, it was the you see the bell and you see the round stuff, that's the pomegranate. But according, some Mefarshim say there were 18 and 18, but most Mefarshim learned there were 72 of each. There are actually 72 pomegranate, 72 bells. Here it says one of the reasons is because the Me'il, and we're soon going to discuss this at greater length, the Me'il, that each garment that came to the world was to forgive for Sitna Vedas, the Me'il was to forgive Lashon Hara.
Leprosy.
Yeah. Now, there are 72 possible shades of leprosy. Leprosy was when you had white skin coloring. And the Gemara says there are 72 possibilities of white. So because the Me'il forgave the sin of Lashon Hara, which caused Tzaras, Hashem said, I want you to cover every shade possible of Tzaras, of leprosy. So there are 72 pomegranates corresponding with the 72 shades of white that you can get leprosy for speaking slander on Lashon Hara that the Me'il forgave for.
The pomegranates were white color then?
Huh?
They were white color, not
right.
Red color.
No. The pomegranates, it says, were turquoise. Here, it says in the puzzle what they were made out of. Puzzle Amid Gimel. No, corresponded with it.
Okay.
How far down did the mill go?
Mill went all the way to the floor. Well, then, look, you see, this is the full Kohen God. Yeah, this is the full Kohen God, even with the tzitz. They didn't draw his face, though.
It's counted with the hat,
investment? Yeah. Yeah, because the tzitz and the hat were two separate garments. Mm-hmm. But if you look at this one, this is the Kohen God in full attire. So the Me'il went actually all the way down.
Did he wear that all the time in the
Beit HaMikdash? Anytime he was in the Beit HaMikdash.
Uh-huh. How come this when he was out of Beit HaMikdash?
Huh?
When he was out? Yeah, he was allowed to take off all
the vessels. First of all, there's a lot of different opinions on one, but this is a much more correct picture than this.
This one?
Yeah. This is very, even the picture here was just plain. It's just, I don't know. We'll see when we get to the, we didn't get to learn the hat yet.
Did he get dressed in the Beit HaMikdash?
Yeah, they had a special dressing room for the Kohanim.
Baba, did they ever sleep in Beit HaMikdash?
They used to watch. You remember we learned that the 24 places, the Kohanim and Levim, the Levim would watch 21 places in the Beit HaMikdash, and the Kohanim would watch in 3. Altogether, it was 24 places. Every night, there were shifts of Kohanim sleeping. And there was a guy that went around every night, making sure none of the guards fell asleep. The Mishnah says, in Midas, that if the guy fell asleep, the guy watching, the Isha Rabayis, Roshus Hoyolei, L'chev de B'makel, he had permission to hit him, and now he even had permission to burn his clothing. Not on him. That would be dangerous. No, in other words, when the guy walked around, this is what the Mishnah says, the guy would walk, the chief guard would walk around during the night, you know, making sure everybody was up. If the guard didn't stand up and greet him, The guy in charge was called Ish Arabayis. He was the guy in charge of Arabayis. If he walked around and the guys didn't stand up and say hello, Nika, there was notice where the guy was sleeping. Yeah, again, a zetz.
No, they were married, the Kohanim, no?
Should have been married. What are they, priests?
So what?
Oh, they were priests, yeah, but not those types of priests.
So what, they were sleeping different time in the Beit HaMikdash?
Listen, the Kohanim had weekly shift. Remember we learned David and Shmuel and Navi divided all the Kohanim and Leviim into 24 families.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, they're given approximately, let's say, in the Hebrew calendar, there's like less than 52 weeks a year. So the 24 shifts, each worked a week. The rest of the time they were home.
Okay.
They ended up working twice a year, because 24 is like 2 weeks a year, 24 weeks apart, excluding Yom Tov when all the Kohanim were there working, because of heavy traffic. So the rest of the year they were home, so they were in the Beis HaMikdash for a week, every half a year.
And they had to put all the clothes.
The regular Kohen, 4 garments. The Kohen Gadol, 8 garments.
Okay, and when they are not inside the Beit HaMikdash, they wear normal garments?
They wear blue jeans with t-shirts.
That's what I'm asking.
Yeah.
Good.
And baseball caps.
Didn't sleeping in the Beit HaMikdash impure?
No. No.
Only isn't it like the Sukkah, you're not supposed to be...
Well, there were... If a Kohen became Tummy in the Beit HaMikdash, they had to go right away. There are underground tunnels. You had to immediately go out and go underground. There was a mikveh in the Beis HaMikdash. You had to go to the mikveh. And there was a whole process.
It was organized.
Yeah, it was very organized. There was a few mikvehs in the Beis HaMikdash, in fact.
Hot?
Yeah, one hot, one cold, and one medium.
It was preheated.
Well, I heard the Kohanim all had...
No, you know how they used to heat? The Gemara talks... Hello.
No, they all had mikvahs in their homes, didn't they?
The Kohanim, the Gemara says, how did they heat? How did they warm the mikveh? It was like well water. How did they warm the mikveh? So it says they used to put into it a heated piece of metal.
Oh, wow.
They used to heat up metal, and then they didn't have, like we have today, electric heaters with filters and everything. They would actually put in like a big piece of metal that was red hot, and they would put it into the water and would warm it up.
Wow.
In fact, the Gemara discusses a very interesting thing. You know, when there's a leap year, so Tishrei comes out later. Right? Now, the later Yom Kippur is, the colder it is. It's not like California in November, it's 94 degrees outside. Okay? In most normal places, it gets colder, like, okay, in the winter. So the Kohen sometimes wanted them not to make a leap year, that his mikveh shouldn't be so cold on Yom Kippur. Because if it was closer to the summer, but they said they didn't take that into consideration. When they made a leap year, they took certain things into consideration, but that was not one of them.
Mm-hmm. That the olden time the mikveh was not warm up anyway.
I said they used to warm it with a piece of hot metal.
Is there any record of the actual temperature they worked for?
Yeah, 110 degrees.
No, I don't know. No, there's no record of that. No, how could it be a record of it?
Can we use technology?
When Mashiach comes, I'm sure you could use technology.
We used to have some technology before. We don't know
that. Okay.
They didn't.
If you look in the laws of mikveh, in the Hilchos Mikvahs, the Paskim were there, right? You're not allowed to heat a mikveh. This that mikvahs became heated nowadays, that we go to warm mikvahs most of the time, of hot mikvahs or whatever, was takonis of the later Paskim that said, otherwise people wouldn't go, so it's better to do it this way than the other way. But if you take like the Shach in Yoredeo in the Hilchos Mikvahs, over there, right, the mikveh shouldn't be heated.
What do you do in winter at 0 degrees?
What do they do in Russia in the winters when they went to the rivers? They used to actually cut ice, dig through the ice to go to the mikveh.
Honestly,
listen, in Russia under communism, yeah? women had to go to the mikveh. Men also went to the mikveh every day to chassidim before davening. But a woman that had to go to the mikveh. Yeah. What do you think, that open mikvehs like you have today, or you make appointments? You're under communist regime. Do you used to have to sneak into mikvehs in the middle of the night? Do you used to have to actually chop ice? Because it was freezing in the winters there. They had to chop ice and they would immerse in the freezing cold mikvehs. The rivers, whatever it was.
That's why they drink.
Yeah, keep warm.
Didn't you just say they heated the mikvahs in the base of mikvahs with iron things?
Yeah, and the base of mikdash was different, though. Everything was different than the base of mikdash. Everything was much different than the base of mikdash.
Five-star hotel. Second-class citizen.
There were korbanos and...
There's a woman in Russia, she wants to go to the mikvah. The water was so cold. So many times she goes to go inside and it's so cold she doesn't go, she comes back. Another lady comes to go to the mikvah. She sees it and says, "How was the water?" She got so embarrassed, she turned around and she goes back.
Went back.
And
she's but I just want to correct what I said. I don't remember if I said it correctly or incorrectly. There were not 72 bells and 72 pomegranates. There were 36 and 36 altogether, 72. One opinion says 18 and 18, and there were 36 altogether. Okay.
Yeah,
but here he brings down, I know that, but here, the marshal, in this one, they bring down 36 bells and 36 pomegranates were arranged alternately on each panel of the robe. And each panel, you know what? So that's how you get it. The Me'il had, there was a front panel and the back panel. So it was talking about the 72 altogether of each.
What is the Me'il made out of?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, the Me'il itself, and this is a very interesting thing that they discussed over here. One of the reasons why they needed bells at the bottom, you know, we really should learn the Pasuk first, why they had bells at the bottom to hear the Kohen Gadol going into the Beis HaMikdash. And they learned many lessons from this. You come into somebody's house, you should knock first. Just don't come barging to the house or to the room or whatever. You're supposed to knock first. Let them know you're coming. But also they say, like we said before, the Me'il forgave for Lashon Hara. What's Lashon Hara? Voices, noise. You talk Lashon Hara, you don't think Lashon Hara, you talk Lashon Hara. So to forgive it, there had to be a voice on it. And therefore, it actually the bells. Now, like he says,
the bells not the meal, what they call it, the meal?
The bells actually rang. There were clings, whatever you call them. The
clingers.
Clingers in the, inside the bells.
What about those pomegranates? Did they?
Not the pomegranates. The pomegranate bell. So the bell made noise.
What did they call it?
It's definitely not a
clanger.
The bottom line is that, like it says, why was the decree of the Eden sealed in the Midbar? Because they spoke Lashon Hara. Whoever speaks Lashon Hara causes the Shekhinah to leave the Jewish people, like it says. And Hashem punishes and all these things. So, he brings down Me'amleh, there's a few interesting stories about Lashon Hara. He says there was a Maisa B'chassid Echad, was a righteous person, that somebody spoke Lashon Hara, terrible Lashon Hara against him. So he said when the Chassid found out that his friend spoke Lashon Hara against him, he sent him a very expensive present. The Chassid sent the guy that spoke Lashon Hara against him a very expensive present. And he says, "I'm sending you this present because you sent me a very big present." The Chassid said, by speaking Lashon Hara against me, you gave me a big present, so I'm giving you back a big present. So he says, what does that mean? He says, because it says in the Gemara, when you speak Lashon Hara, let's say if I speak against you, then all my mitzvahs go to you.
Oh my God.
So he says to the guy, you just gave me all your mitzvahs, thank you very much, so I'm sending you back a nice present instead, to reciprocate.
But that's not real,
right? That would
encourage
people to speak
Lashon. Why? Then you lose all your mitzvahs.
Yeah, but if you're a generous person.
That's a good idea, yeah.
You give them back to
mitzvahs? Okay, let's first, before we get more into Lashon Hara, let's first finish... the psukim over here. So it says like this, in Lamedal on top of 472. It has to be pamins of Vedimin. There's a gold belt, pomegranate, pamins of Vedimin. And as we went, as the pasuk saying, one of each. Al shule amil suffer all around the hem of the robe. That was at the bottom of the robe. V'hoya al adin l'sharis. It should be on Adin when he serves in the Beis HaMikdash. And he says like this, v'nishma kolei, that his voice should be heard, v'vayel ha-kedish, when he enters the sanctuary, when he enters the Mishkan, lefnei Hashem, before Hashem, u'b'seisei, when he moves, and he leaves, v'lo yomis, that he shouldn't die. Meaning, that if the Pasuk is telling you, if a Kohen Gadol is missing one of the eight garments, and he serves in the Beis HaMikdash, he gets capital punishment. He gets killed for not having the proper garments. Now, the Baal HaTurim says a very famous vart over here. It says like this. It says like this. He says in the Chumash, three times the word v'nishma. Here it says nishma kailai. He says in Tanakh, there's three times the word nishma. Yes. Nasa v'nishma. V'nishma kailai. And then it says v'nishma pisga mamelech. In the Megillah, it says that the edict of the king should be publicized throughout his kingdom, kirabahi, because it's vast. So he says like this. The Gemara says in Megillah, if somebody has a choice to learn Torah or to listen to the Megillah, what do you have to do? You have to listen to the Megillah. What comes first, Avoda in the Beis HaMikdash or the Megillah? Megillah is comes first. That means Megillah is more important. Megillat Esther is more important than Talmud Torah, because the Gemara said Mevatlin Talmud Torah leKriyas HaMegillah. You stop learning Torah to listen to the Megillah. Then you have Megillah or Avaida the Beis HaMikdash. The Kohen has to stop Avaida to go listen to the Megillah. And he says this is what it means. V'nishma kolei here means which one do you have to listen to? V'nishma pisga mamelech, which is the Megillah, kirabahi, because it's greater. That means it says nishma by Torah, Nasa v'nishma. It says nishma by the Kohanim's garments, which is Avaid in the Beis HaMikdash. And the third time it says by Kriyas HaMegillah. But over there it says kirabahi, it's greater. That means how do we learn out from Chumash that reading the Megillah is greater than learning Torah or doing the Avaid in the Beis HaMikdash? Because by Torah it says v'nishma, by Avaid it says v'nishma, but by Megillah it says kirabahi, that it's even greater. Why is it important? Because it's Persumei Nisa, publicizing the miracle of Purim.
That's when we get the Torah back again.
That's when the Eden re-accepted the title willingly and all that type of stuff. Okay, so this is also what he says. The Klal Yakov explains this whole thing about the Me'il, again, forgiving for Lashon Hara, and the more you, when you look at the Me'il, it reminds you not to come to sin in Lashon Hara. And therefore, the Me'il had to protrude from the rest of the garments because it had to forgive for the concept of Lashon Hara, and the Eden had to constantly see it. Now, over here, he brings down, after all of this, he says like this. What does it mean? It says in the Pasuk here that the Kohen cannot come into the Beis HaMikdash without his voice being heard, v'layamusa, that he shouldn't die. So it says that the Malachim would not be able to kill him when he walks into the Beis HaMikdash with the bells. But if the Kohen would walk without the bells into the Beis HaMikdash, the Malachim would kill him. The angels. It's like walking, you can't just walk into the palace of the king whenever you want. the guards are going to kill you, right? If you try to break into the palace of the king,
why wouldn't the guards kill him? Why
the guards would be the malachim.
Oh, okay.
Then there's another thing. No, the malachim that were spiritually hanging out the base. Where do you think the malachim hang out? At the bars? I'm going to be some mikdash. Coffee shop. The Starbucks at the Beis HaMikdash they hung up. Then, another thing it says, what was important to have, for the Kohen Gadol to have bells when he goes in and out? When he goes in, I understand. He's serving Hashem. Why would say so when he goes out? So it says that was one of the ways they knew the Kohen Gadol stayed alive Yom Kippur. Because if he died, then there wouldn't be any sounds of the bells. Because he wouldn't be coming out. So not only was it important to hear the bells going in, it was also important that he should walk out with it.
And the cord, rope.
Yeah, that was only in the second Beis Hamikdash after it happened already. But how did they know to pull him out that he died? When they didn't hear the bells. By the way, this is one of the sources, I mean, at the, why, you know, when you have a keser, a crown and a sefer Torah, they have bells usually. It's the concept of sefer Torah, represents the Kohen Gadol, all that type of stuff.
Where did the Kohen Gadol go after Yom Kippur?
It says in the...
Here in public?
In the Machzer of Yom Kippur, we say, Ma'ed Neda B'tzeisi Min HaKadosh, when the Kohen Gadol... It says in the Machzer of Yom Kippur that the Kohen Gadol, when he went home, people would walk him home, and it would be a big simcha, but say sim in HaKadosh. Number one, that the Kohen Gadol stayed alive, and he knew the Jewish people were forgiven. So everybody would accompany the Kohen Gadol to his house in Yerushalayim. The Kohen Gadol lived in Yerushalayim, not far from the Beit HaMikdash.
Did he go in and out after the Yom Kippur?
Yeah, he would, like everybody else did.
Did you take vacations?
He didn't take vacations, no.
He had the same duties then other Kohen?
Yeah, well, he had more.
He didn't have Shabbos off?
No, he didn't have Shabbos off. Kohen Gadol had to bring a carbon every day, a flower offering, and in fact, later on in this parasha, it discusses the carbonis that the Kohen had to bring every day in the Beis HaMikdash, that the Kohen Gadol had to bring. The Kohen Gadol was in charge of the Beis HaMikdash from the time he became a Kohen Gadol until he died. If he died, when he died, if his son was fit for the job, he got the job first. If not, they would take somebody else. If a Kohen Gadol sinned, so they threw him off.
And if he had a few sons?
The oldest would have din kedima. Same thing like a melech. If he was fit. He had to be b'chachma and be Yerushamayim and everything.
It's a very big responsibility.
To be a Kohen Gadol? Mm-hmm. Let me tell you a little secret. To be a Jewish leader is a big responsibility. To be a parent is a big responsibility. To be a spouse is a big responsibility. And to be a human being is a big responsibility.
Here it's like a death, life and death every second.
Correct. Any. Make sure Rabbeinu wasn't a big responsibility.
No, but it's different because every time they have to do it, the whole nation on their shoulders going to the Beit HaMikdash be accepted. They do one thing wrong.
The Rambam says in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, there's a very interesting halacha. There was a king and a Kohen Gadol. Who stood up for whom?
It's hard to.
No, there's halacha.
Who
it says in Sanhedrin, in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the Rambam brings it down in the halacha. When a Kohen Gadol came into the king in a private setting, the king had to stand up for the Kohen Gadol. In public, the Kohen Gadol stood up for the king. The king stood up for nobody in public because he had to be. But in private, when a Kohen Gadol walked into the king, whenever he wanted to go into the king, he went into the king had to stand up for the Kohen Gadol. Because the Kohen Gadol was Hashem's representative on earth. Shlucha d'Achmana. So in that respect, a Kohen Gadol, it's only because the king needed to show, you know, might and beauty and splendor. Therefore, the king was not allowed to take a haircut in the presence of anybody. He wasn't allowed to be in a bathhouse with anybody. You know, it has to be a melech b'yofye terzen einach. You had to see the king in the ultimate glory. So in public, the Kohen Gadol had to stand up for the king. You know, because of the nation. But between the two of them, the melech had to stand up for the Kohen Gadol. So, in that respect, it was a bigger responsibility even than the melech. Mm-hmm. He carried all the sins. That this one. All the kalim, all the garments of the Kohen Gadol. For instance, give me an example. The ketanis was mechaper and murder. The mechnasayim, the pants the Kohen Gadol, the Kohenim wore was for znus. The hat was for gaiva. The avnate was for foreign thoughts. The cheshin was crookedness of din. The eifed was mechaper and avidah zara. The me'il was mechaper and... So you don't matter, Kohen Gadol carrying all the sins of the whole nation on his little body.
That's why you have to wear them.
Yeah. You know, even in Halacha, a melech had to take a haircut every day. Kohen Gadol once a week.